Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
Welcome in to The Scoop, the number one UNC football recruiting podcast in the world, part of the Inside Carolina Podcast Network. And this podcast is brought to you by our good friends at Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the best and most local place for all your UNC apparel and UNC gear. I'm your host, Ross Martin. As always, on The Scoop, I'm joined by Donnie Scoops Callahan. What's going on, Don?
What is going on? Not much. We got baseball came back. I know we'll talk some of that sort of stuff, which was good. Soccer season, as we talked about last podcast, that's starting to wind down a little bit, I think. I mean, I'm still learning, so maybe it doesn't. Football is, I guess, there's starting camp and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, so things are starting to get rolling. There's starting to be things to do, There's football camps for recruits. There's another one coming up this week that I'm going to be at.
Yeah, it does feel like things are in motion a little more, sports, obviously, and football things are starting to happen. Yeah. There's a little more to talk about. I feel a little bit more busier than I did earlier in July, so there we go.
What about you? What's going on with you?
Let me do this first. Before we start and get into it, I want to remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe. Give us a 5-star rating, a quick review about what you liked about this podcast or any IC podcast. And then subscribe. Mash the subscribe button wherever you listen to your podcast, and that helps us. It helps all the IC podcasts, and then it automatically gives you the podcast in your feed. For me, kind of back on the grind, kind of had that little vacation, and it's a waiting game, waiting for them to decide on the football season, because that determines kind of what I can do. Mm-hmm. What the rest of July is going to look like, and what August is going to look like. And, I have flights booked. I have the Hawaii trip for basketball. So there's a lot of things in motion. I'm just kind of in a waiting stage right now.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see what happens with the Hawaii trip just because.
Yeah.
I mean, flying is for me, I've been fortunate to where I've driven to everywhere I needed to go. So I'm in my own car. When I get there, I can make sure I social distance and all that. Getting into an airport, getting onto a plane, that's a completely different ballgame. A lot of things are completely out of your control all that.
Yeah, confined space and people next to you that you don't know. So whatever, we'll figure it out. All right, sorry for cutting you off there, Donna. Is there anything else you want to say?
No, I'm good, okay, Ross. Thank you.
I know we had some complaints about that. We took a week off to kind of put all our listeners in time out. There were a lot of complaints about the podcast. We're going to get into that later. We're back. So here's what we're going to do today. We have a whole list here. Let me pull it up. We're going to talk about Travion Stevenson, the outside linebacker, kind of weak side defensive end who committed to UNC earlier last week. We didn't do a podcast directly after, but we're going to get into him. That's going to be the main focus of this podcast. We're getting to what happened with the kicker who flirted with UNC, Andre Borgalis. Boom, nailed it. We're going to talk a little about the two scoops from the last 2 weeks and what Don feels was important out of those scoops, little tidbits there. We're going to talk a little about the 2020 season, what we think, our opinion, and there's not much news that we know that y'all don't know. And then we're going to answer the haters. A lot of complaints about this podcast, the last podcast we did, which was 2 weeks ago. A lot of complaints about me. And so we're going to address those. This is an open forum. We consider this a podcast family. So I'm gonna dive into.
Yeah,
those.
I don't know if it's accurate to say that there were complaints about the podcast. I think there were complaints about Ross Martin.
Yeah, but you're part of it.
I guess I don't know.
I think
I was being victimized.
There can't be offensive banner if there's only one person. That's not true. But I'll also say on the complaints, there are a lot more positive comments than negative comments.
So there always are. Yeah, I think for the most part, people love the the Scoop podcast. Is that what it's called, The Scoop?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, and then we're going to get into our top five, which has been a long time coming. I think we kind of dropped it over a month ago, which is the top – I like this one a lot. The top five most important players for the 2020 season for UNC football, not including Sam Howell. So we're going to get into a little bit of talk about who is most important, who would have the biggest impact on the team if he was to be injured. So we'll get into a little bit of talk, and I'm interested to see what – I haven't looked at this, but interested to see what the listeners have to say, and then what Don and I would give our top five most important players. So a little legitimate football talk at the end of the podcast, so stay tuned for that. Remember, rate, review, and subscribe to the IC podcast. We'll get right into it. Travion Stevenson, Don, pull up his profile here. 6'3", 217 from Hampton, Virginia, that Virginia Beach type area guy. He is ranked the number 1549 ranked player in the country, the 84th weak side defensive end, and the 46th player in the state of Virginia. He was a Penn State commitment before he flipped to the Tar Heels. Don, I know you've addressed this a little bit, both on the boards and in articles, but can you kind of give us a little insight into what happened with him committing to UNC?
Well, a lot of this kind of starts way back when Zaire Patterson, who was initially UNC's top target for that weak side rush linebacker, outside linebacker position in Jay Bateman's defense. You know, a guy who you want to, more than anything else, provide a lot of pressure on the quarterback, but also drop into coverage and help stop the run. So when Patterson decided to go the Clemson route, UNC started to kind of look around, and actually, you know, from what I was told from my sources, Travion Stevenson was one of the first guys that they reached out to, but at the time he had just made a commitment to Pitt and wasn't interested in ending that commitment at the time. So UNC, and this happens all the time, you reach out to a guy says, thanks, but no thanks sort of thing. So UNC moved on naturally. And the guy that they went to is George Wilson, who we all know now, you know, it seemed like North Carolina was the pick for the longest time, until a couple of days before his announcement started to leak out that South Carolina was going to be the selection, and that's what he ultimately ended up doing. So North Carolina, with that, and we kind of reported on this, the plan after Wilson went the South Carolina route was to kind of stand pat and just see what was going to open up, what guys might be on the market later on. And also, I mean, the problem is UNC has a group of targets that the staff likes at that position, but all of those guys have some sort of question that would need to be answered either through some sort of evaluation or just kind of seeing how they look during their their senior seasons. While that was all happening, Travion reached out to UNC and was like, hey, are you guys still interested? And basically, Travion was, him and his family kind of talked about just the situation with Pitt, and it had nothing to do with what Pitt did wrong. It was just the fact that, you know, proximity to his family, they began to realize was going to be a little bit more important than what they placed on it initially. And North Carolina obviously is what, like 3 hours away from his home. So, you know, things happened pretty quickly and ultimately ended up committing to North Carolina, flipping his commitment.
So my question here is, obviously this was a topic on the message boards, is he's not a very highly ranked kid, and he's pretty far away from those two other top targets they had, and George Wilson and the guy from the guy you just said, but from Winston-Salem Prep,
Zaire Patterson.
So there's got to be other guys out there that they could wait on, try to flip or reach out maybe a little bit more regionally into other states. I'm sure Georgia, Florida, some of the other states in their footprint have better players ranked wise. Mm-hmm. What do they like about Stevenson? Make sure I get his name right. Yeah, Stevenson, that made them kind of jump so early on this commitment. Because, you know, I know UNC likes to get all their players in kind of by the summer, but, you know, signing day is not until December.
Yeah, so they obviously, the staff just saw him or when they evaluated him, he had a higher grade on him than what some others did, you know, particularly those who do the rankings for 24/7 Sports and Rivals. And, you know, coaching staffs definitely could be wrong. They're wrong all the time. And 24/7 Sports and Rivals could be wrong. I mean, they're wrong all the time also. So it's a matter of on who you kind of see. And really, and that's why I kind of always urge people to kind of throw on the film yourself and watch to see what you think and maybe kind of learn from, you know, just what type of player and all that. But as far as waiting, to be honest, I mean, I wasn't told this, but I think some of it had to do with the fact that, you know, Mack Brown does prefer to get his class locked down pretty quickly. And I think that kind of weighed in there, maybe subconsciously. But really, you know, talking to my sources, it was a situation where they were like, hey, we like this kid. He's willing to flip now.
Yeah.
And let's say hypothetically, we say, no, let's wait and let me see what some of these other guys and see what else is out there. And then they miss on the opportunity because maybe Virginia Tech or Virginia, you know, jumps in there and kind of leapfrogs North Carolina. So, yeah, I think it really comes down to the fact that North Carolina really liked this kid and didn't want to let him slip through their grasp.
Okay, so what do they like about him? He's 6'3", 217, so he's got decent length. You know, obviously needs to add a lot of weight. I saw a picture of him. He's definitely like a skinny kid. They want him from that linebacker, weak side, defensive end type hybrid position, like a Tamon Fox plays, that a Chris Collins will play at UNC. What do they like about him? What does he bring from a football standpoint?
Yeah, so he's definitely skinny, but you know, so George Wilson, super skinny. You know, George Wilson, when I saw him in person for the first time, I was actually was surprised by not only just how skinny he was, but just how, you know, his build was, didn't seem like it could hold a lot of weight. Look,
you talking about George Wilson or Stevenson?
George Wilson.
Okay, yeah.
Ironically, right after George, the week after George had committed to South Carolina, he was at a camp that I was at, and that was the first time I actually got a chance to lay eyes on him. But Stevenson, he's definitely skinny, but he has the broader frame, which would obviously allow weight. I mean, we know that these guys are going to add weight, particularly that second year in college. The thing, though, is they loved the fact that he was really productive at really a school that has been very has been kind of a powerhouse in Virginia at Phoebus High School. So he had really good stats. Everybody around that area seemed to vouch for him at 757 area. And one of actually the biggest proponents for Stevenson was Deion Glover. And if you've been following this podcast or following Tony Grimes's recruitment, you know, that's Tony Grimes's dad, but he's also very, very active in the Tidewater area as far as training players and putting on camps, especially now with the coronavirus stuff going on. So he's very familiar with the talent in that area. And so, you know, when you get a guy like that vouching for a kid, North Carolina definitely had to listen.
Great. And so, if the staff likes a guy and think he's productive, I mean, you got to trust the staff. That's often a common thing you see on the message boards that, you know, rankings aren't everything, and you got to trust the evaluations of a Jay Bateman, Dre Bly, I guess Javon DeWitt coaches this position as
and
well.
And I think the thing, too, is that Bateman's defense is unique. And so he's looking for certain things in guys that the rankings aren't going to take into consideration. Yeah, and I think that played a role too. And one of my sources explained to me that outside rush linebacker position is kind of like, you want to have it like a bullpen in baseball. And so those who don't follow baseball, you don't want, you know, you don't want 10 right-handers that throw fastballs. You want some left-handers in there. You want a bunch of different guys in there. And that's what Bateman's kind of looking to for that room, for that outside linebacker position room.
Yeah. You want someone who can maybe line up on with a 3-point stance, like a Tamon Fox, who's more of that pure rush guy, but you also need guys you can cover. You need the long guys. You need the really, really fast outside linebackers, but you also need guys that can probably, you know, like I said, like line up and be a true defensive end.
Yeah, and not to interrupt you, Ross.
Oh, no problem. Hey, good stuff.
in particular, I think what Stevenson brings is that he would be among, if you look at the group that North Carolina has right now, he'd be one of the guys who would be, I guess, most comfortable against a two tight end set. You know, a guy who could match up well, has the strength and all that. I'm watching him on film. He doesn't have the burst of Desmond Evans or some of those other guys. But I mean, he's a guy who definitely has the strength, to and the ability to set the edge, and play against those tight ends.
All right, awesome. Yeah, Travion Stevenson commits to UNC. Let me go through the stats real quick again. 6'3", 217 from Phoebus High School in Hampton, Virginia. I was looking at his photos just now, and obviously this was on the front page of Inside Carolina. But what's up with that photo? And is that his UNC room?
Yeah. I asked him about that, and he was a little bit, I don't know, he was a little bit strange with his answers. He said it was a family member's.
Okay.
And I followed up, and this is through text message. I followed up and said, "Well, what family member?" Because that's interesting. As you pointed out, and he never got back to me on that. So
it's got football helmet, it's got Jordan shoes, it's got UNC everything, posters, framed UNC magazine covers, basketballs, footballs, and he's in a UNC hat in a UNC chair with UNC on a big screen. So it's a UNC room. I can see it being like an uncle or some family.
But why not say that? Why say family member? Like, if you asked me something about, I wouldn't say family member. I'd say my uncle or my cousin or whoever, you know what I mean? I don't know. Maybe it's just me.
Yeah. All right, we're going to move on here from the podcast here. Let's do a quick live read on Johnny T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com.
I love how you give play-by-play while you're doing it.
Yeah, I'm going to be a very open and
transparency.
Transparency here. I wrote down all this stuff. Yeah. All right, so, yeah, Johnny T-Shirt, JohnnyT-Shirt.com. They stayed with us as our loyal sponsor of this podcast. It's a great place for all your UNC apparel needs. This is what they're doing right now. They have the Turn of the Mac t-shirts. They have Carolina Blue masks to protect you from the pandemic currently going around our world. They have Football in the Forest, the book by Lee Pace. I think a second edition came out with a bunch more pages about Mac Brown's return. You can pick up items in the store if you order online. I'm not sure if they're open right now, but you can get everything online. I went to their store online. Everything. It's a really good website. They have tons of cool sweatshirts, vintage sweatshirts, throwback sweatshirts, jerseys, tons of things with Olympic sports, soccer scarves, baseball jerseys. They have a lot of things for tailgating and for your home, flags, pillows, stuffed animals, things for golf, ties, bags, golf bags, tees, watches, and then anything when it comes to just shirts, sweatshirts, shorts, jerseys. They have 4 different baseball jerseys, 16 different UNC basketball jerseys and shorts, 6 different football jerseys, the Carolina Blue, the Navy, the practice jerseys, hats, toboggans, they have different kinds of hats. So anything you want at Giant T-Shirt, GiantT-Shirt.com. They're our loyal podcast sponsors. Go to the Inside Carolina Premium Message Board to get that 10% off discount code. It's great for gifts, birthdays, holidays are right around the corner. So load up. I mean, it's a great place to get gifts. It's an easy place. Everybody wants UNC stuff. I mean, if you can't think of something to get your UNC friend or family member, go to Giant T-Shirt and GiantT-Shirt.com and get a shirt, a jersey, something small, something big. Get all that at Giant T-Shirt and JohnnyT-Shirt.com. All right. Next up is what happened with this kicker. He's a Miami commitment, Andre Borregales. Tell us what happened there. There's stuff on Twitter. They're trying to get his kicker, and then all of a sudden it didn't happen. Just quickly, Don, what happened with him?
Yeah, so North Carolina offered him a couple weeks ago, and at the time he kind of he basically said that he was going to flip eventually. He actually told a bunch of the UNC commits just jumped on him immediately, and he told a lot of those guys that, hey, I'm going to flip, and some of them had felt like it was going to happen pretty soon.
Kicker from Florida, right?
Kicker from South Florida, okay, of all places. He's been committed to Miami. So I apologize.
Yeah.
He's been committed to Miami for over a year. On top of that, his brother, who played at FIU, I get the FIU and FAU's confused. Yeah. Played FIU and actually helped FIU beat Miami. He recently transferred into Miami.
Okay.
And will be their kicker this year. Apparently the family are huge Miami fans. So this from the get-go just sounded kind of sketchy, yeah. You know. But anyway, so he, super nice kid. So I kind of feel bad that some of the heat that he took. Super nice kid. And he told all of the UNC commits that, hey, I'm going to flip to UNC. And I think really he just kind of caught up in the moment yeah. a little bit. The irony of all this is that so he gets the offer. He has a Zoom meeting with Mac Brown, which was big, which some thought maybe that was when he might commit. And then the following week, he did a virtual visit to North Carolina. I talked to him a couple hours after that virtual visit to get his take on the virtual visit and then also a Zoom meeting with Mac Brown. We did an interview, all that sort of stuff. Everything was good. 2 hours later, he tweets out that he has firmed up his Miami commitment. And, of course, the UNC pledges just went nuts on Twitter about it. And, you know, but.
Okay. So was he going to be offered a scholarship for UNC?
Yeah. Well, he was offered a scholarship.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. I mean, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I noticed that, too. It's like, this guy's from, like, the Miami yeah. area, like. Why would he? I mean, it just didn't make sense in my book, but whatever. Okay, so are they seeking a scholarship kicker in this class?
Yes and no. I think if they can get an elite guy, and they felt like Borregales was an elite guy, yeah. then they'll take him. But they're not going to just all of a sudden. Don't expect an offer to just be thrown out there. Now, if Ruggles doesn't have a great year, then you might. That situation might lean more towards the yes than the no
for
a kicker.
Okay, to sign in December.
Yes, yes. And you're just because you have the Grayson Atkins,
the transfer from Furman.
Yeah, who if Ruggles doesn't do what he needs to do this year, Atkins will be the guy. But obviously, UNC will be able to still evaluate Ruggles. You during practices, and if they feel like, hey, this guy's not going to be able to do it for us next year, then either they're going to have to go the grad transfer route again, which uh-huh. is always kind of dicey because you don't know what sort of talent pool you're looking at, or they'll try to get a kicker.
Gotcha. All right, cool. A little kicker talk there on the scoop. All righty, next up. You had two scoops we haven't talked about.
Yeah, do you want to just real quick just kind of get it out, the Peyton Page stuff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so he committed to Clemson last night? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. So, what happened with that? You dropped a scoop on Monday, a little brief, little message board post. Go ahead. What kind of happened that made you post that, given that in my mind, in most people's minds, he was a Clemson lean for so long?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess it was about a month ago. I put it out there to, hey, North Carolina's not going to get this kid. That was from very, very, very multiple sources within the UNC football program who were like, this is over. And then yeah. for whatever reason, Mama Page got back involved, or she was always involved. She was the person that UNC was talking to for the most part throughout, but she just really kind of amped up her communication. And that even included getting Peyton involved in some Zoom meetings and everything like that. And things looked really promising for North Carolina.
Monday or like leading up to that?
Probably 2 or 3 weeks prior to the announcement. And so
okay.
It could have been just due diligence that she wanted to make sure, okay, you know, let's make sure Clemson is a spot and it's not North Carolina. And so let's talk to these coaches and see what they're saying and see if maybe they can convince us otherwise. I don't know. But yeah, so he picked Clemson. You know, he's actually a former 5-star, but he's a 4-star guy. Going to Clemson, which has kind of been, you know, Clemson seems to be able, whoever they want in the state of North Carolina, they've been able to get.
So my take here is, I mean, he was pretty big, 360, you know, 6'5", 360, something like that.
Yeah. And so here's the thing too with him. And this has been talked about a little bit on the message board, but from what I've been told is that, so he showed up to the Fab 50, which is a big underclassman camp in January at like something like almost 400 pounds. And yeah. So there's been some talk about just the fact that you know, the whole recruiting process might have just kind of, you might have got a big head from it and has slacked a little bit in the classroom, slacked with a lot of different things. So he was a kid that you probably had all the tools, absolutely all the tools, but you're probably going to have to get on track a little bit, which, you know, I mean, UNC recruits a lot of guys like that. But yeah, so he's going to be a guy that Clemson's going to have to kind of work on and get on track a little bit.
6'4", 360 is what he's listed. Yeah, I was talking to actually some guys last night, and the move, I think, in general, is the move is away from these big, big, heavy nose tackles because people are running it less and less and less. And when they do run it, they usually pass it to a wide receiver in the backfield, and he can kind of get out, you know, in that straightforward ground game is not as much of a thing anymore, especially mm-hmm. in college with these spread and air raid offenses. So I think from UNC's eyes, you'd much rather have more versatile defensive tackles who can line up in multiple spots. You know, Javari Ritzy, who's not 300 pounds, who's a little more athletic, who can still potentially play inside, but definitely can chase, you know, the quarterback and the running back a little bit more sideline to sideline, as opposed to a big dude who will have trouble kind of getting up and down the field.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, though, what made Page special, though, is that despite his size, he moved so well. And a lot of that was he was a kid who focused a lot on basketball throughout middle school. I think he didn't come out for football until his freshman year in high school. He was all basketball.
Yeah, and I'm saying this. I mean, of course, UNC wanted this guy. I'm just saying that in general, I think that's where the trend is going. You know, the Aaron Crawfords, I mean, he's a big dude, but he can only play one position. You still want that guy. You want that guy on a lot of the downs, but maybe not every single down, especially like, you know, third and long, things like that. Okay, moving on here. Anything else from this? Oh, yeah, so let's go to the scoop. What from the scoop stood out last two scoops that you want to talk about? Of course, one was more Travion Stevenson focused. That was last week's. And this week's, I think you did a little bit on more of the walk-ons, things like that.
Yes.
And people enrolling and things like that.
Yeah, so I don't think there's much more to talk about with the scoop a couple weeks ago. If you really want to know just from what we gather from our information, I know some people are like, oh, this is spin. You know, it's what my sources were telling me. So take it for what it's worth. We went really in depth with that. This past week's scoop, though, we broke down the incoming walk-ons, which usually is like a big thing. People really like it. But I think with, you know, the uncertainty, it's kind of like, you know. But I think there's some good walk-ons that North Carolina's bringing in. You know, kicker Noah Burnett is a guy who I think that we might become familiar with at some point. And there's some other guys. Christopher Holiday, who's the son of Corey Holiday. He has a really, really interesting story as far as just, you know, academics and all that. But in addition to that, we break down just what the commitments plan on doing enrollment-wise. And for those who haven't been following it, you know, we have the state of Virginia has, at the very least, postponed the football season until January. We have North Carolina, which hasn't really done a whole lot other than to say that the fall seasons can't begin until September 1st at the earliest, and there's a potential that they can move that back. You have South Carolina and some other states that are similarly up in the air, and just basically we just kind of break it down, just where things are, you know, what guys are thinking about maybe enrolling early who weren't initially thinking about enrolling early. Some guys like Drake May, who plans on enrolling early, but if the high school football season gets moved to the spring, says that maybe I should stay and play both football and basketball in the spring and then just enroll in North Carolina in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, what a mess. Because, like, you know, when's the basketball season going to be played then? Because Drake plays basketball, so.
Yeah, yeah, it could be at the same time. That's a thing.
Yeah, I heard they could, like, start basketball in, like, December and then start football, like, in January. I don't know, like, kind of stagger them a little bit just so there's not as much going on at once.
Yeah, well, that's what they – in Virginia, they talked about kind of just almost condensing all three sports seasons from I think December until May or whatever, and just kind of breaking those up and breaking that time frame into thirds.
Yeah, I mean, and who's to say, this is kind of leads into our next conversation. I mean, who's to say that the virus doesn't flare up again during the flu season? It wasn't that the whole sentiment about when it gets colder.
I think the hope that most people have is that a vaccine will be out by then. The projection is the end of this year, early next year, so that would coincide with having seasons next spring.
Yeah, and I this is kind of just a take from me. Like, I think in the fall and winter, especially in the winter, people are doing less outside, or are doing less in groups outside and less action. You just do less in the winter because it's cold, especially up north. And when it's raining, dark, and it gets dark at 5, like, that naturally forces you inside with the people you live with, as opposed to summer, people are traveling, people are outside, going to pools, hanging out in parties and stuff. So I think naturally the winter promotes social distancing and quarantining.
Yeah, yeah. No, and that actually, that's our next topic is just the season.
Yeah.
So we're kind of naturally segueing into it. You know, what do you think is going to happen?
Yeah. Okay. So 2020 season, we'll do a college football here. I mean, obviously I'm following it because my job, but it's just everything changes every day. There's a new tweet about something else happening. So I guess the ACC was meeting this week. Like Wednesday, we're recording Wednesday, 8 a.m. to talk about like the plan and get the schedule and all that stuff. And it has to be approved and it has to go back. So it's back and forth between the ADs and the presidents. And there's just a lack of central control because every conference is operating on their own. I've heard all along that the SEC and the ACC are aligned. So the proposed plan is a 10+1 schedule. So 10 conference games and one non-conference game. And that would be a matchup with an SEC team. So UNC Auburn, for example, Florida State. This isn't breaking news. I mean, Louisville, Kentucky, Clemson, South Carolina. Of course, you have to get some other matchups going. I think NC State has Mississippi State on the schedule. So there's some natural games built in there. I like that idea. I mean, this may sound bad, but, you know, if you're going to play, just play. I mean, why not? Why cancel, I guess, the UCF game? I guess there's just different testing, different conferences. And that's what they're worried about. But, I mean, if you're playing football, like, are you really that worried? Because people are going to get it. People are going to get coronavirus. That's my whole thing. It's going to happen.
That's my concern. And we're kind of seeing it a little bit with baseball. And, you know, I was personally affected because the Phillies were one of the teams that did not get it. They played the Marlins.
Yeah, I saw your tweet.
Yeah, so they have, I guess, paused their season until Friday. The Marlins have paused their season until Monday at the earliest, or Sunday or Monday at the earliest. The Phillies, just because the Marlins were in their clubhouse and they actually played each other, but they haven't had any positive tests. And that's what kind of worries me is, like, if you look at a similar scenario playing out in college football, and, I mean, it's just it could ravage the season. And the difference, though, is like, so right now, so the Marlins, obviously it kind of spread, and throughout the weekend they had additional players and coaches test positive. The Phillies haven't had any test positive, which, and I think some of that is obviously the restrictions they put in place and the safeguards and everything, but also baseball, you are separate. I mean, really the only time you're really close is maybe, you know, the catcher to the batter, and then, you know, guys who are on base, maybe the first baseman with the base runner. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you're not close to each other. Football, you're always close to each other. And so if one team has an outbreak, the odds of another team having an outbreak or it extending to the other team is, I'm not a doctor, but you got to think that that's pretty good.
So, I mean, look at basketball and baseball, professional basketball and baseball, like, they have the money, they have the testing, they have everything you need to keep it safe because they're trying to make money. And so they have everything you need. And innately, baseball, like you said, is a socially distant sport. Basketball, they're in this confined bubble where they have everything they need and they're protected. So you would think those two are going to have the most success keeping safe and not getting
the virus. One thing with baseball, they don't do the bubble. I know you didn't say that, but I think
they're playing in different arenas, they're traveling more. And
yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
But it's a naturally socially distant sport. And you would think they have everything else they need because they have the money. Like, they have everything they need. College football, man, like you said, it's a contact sport. You're on a college campus with other students. You think you're going to stop a 19-year-old from going to a party on a weekend? First time in college, and there's some girls texting him, and he wants to go to a party, and his buddy's coming. That's going to happen. I think
it doesn't even have to be a party. It could be the fact that someone comes, you know, a couple people come into your dorm room.
Yeah, or you're playing video games with a couple guys.
Yeah.
And one guy at dinner with another group of guys, and that's how it happens. And then they bring it to practice. And they may not have – I'm not super worried about the students, obviously, because we've learned that it doesn't really affect healthy 18 to 22-year-olds as much. But a coach, I mean, what if a coach is in a meeting room and, you know, is everybody keeping their mask on at every moment? It's hard to keep your mask on all the time, especially when you're kind of – you're in a socially distant setting. So, I mean – flare-ups are going to happen, so there have to be contingency plans, and that's why I think they're giving some flexibility to the schedule, I hope. Like, start it early. Like, get it going.
Yeah.
Play as many games as you can, and then there might be a time when you have to take a 2-3-week break.
Yeah.
And a couple teams may have to stop, back up, and quarantine, and then think about coming back. So,
I agree. Starting it as soon as possible, and then make sure you have like a few weeks buffer at the end, so that when you have those quarantine weeks or whatever, you can just reschedule. That's the thing. That's the one thing baseball I don't think is doing so well with, is the fact that they only have like 3 or 4 off days, and so they're now like, well, what do we do with the season? And some of them are talking about, well, let's just do, you know, winning percentage as opposed to just doing wins, because they don't have the built-in days to compensate for
it's baseball. You said baseball, right?
Baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. So they put double headers too, right?
They could play double headers. And the logistics are a lot easier now that you don't have fans involved, but it's, you know, that, speaking of which, so we don't talk about, or we, people don't talk about it so much. I mean, do you feel like there's a chance that fans are going to be in the stands?
I think they are. I think it's going to be like 25% capacity. I don't have any information here, but look, you can be outside with a mask on in a 60,000 seat stadium and be every third row and then staggered seating plus a third row. I think that's fine. I think you have to have staggered entry. So starting maybe an hour and a half before the game, you let of the 25%, you let, you know, 10% in. You have to come in at the game's at noon, come in at 10:30, and then the next group comes in at 10:45, and then the next group comes in at 11, and so everyone's in their seat, and you don't have hundreds of people coming in at once. You have 50 people, whatever. I'm not really doing the math right there, but and then no concessions, like, but you have to have your mask on, and like if you don't have a mask on, like, you get kicked out. Like, you gotta be strict about it. And then I think you're going to ask prioritizing tickets, because obviously they canceled season tickets. So you're going to have the big donors. You have, you know, loyal season ticket holders that are high in the lottery, I guess. And then I don't know about students, but.
Okay.
That's dicey. What do you think? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't. What do I know?
I mean, I think 25% is a good number.
Yeah, yeah.
It's outside.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you do have to figure out something for, you know, allowing people to get for entry. You have to figure out something. Because it doesn't matter if you're in a line forever with a bunch of people. But, yeah, no, I agree, because it's a huge stadium. You can spread out. You can just say, hey, you know, no, you know, not give, like, specific seats for people and just make sure you're social distancing. And if it's 25%, then it should be pretty easy for someone or a group of people to find seats and be socially distant.
I think you have to have – you give out the tickets, like, it's done individual tickets, and they have a ticket, and everything is blocked off already. So your family of six – has their seats already, and it's created by the UNC's, you know, events department, whoever operates the seats. You have your section. It's like blocked off already, and that's where you sit. So they have to do they have to be socially distanced, and maybe do 10 feet between the next family and make sure. I don't think giving people letting them pick their own seats is going to work. Got to have it's got to be all.
So you don't think people could do it? Could figure out on their own?
It could, but wouldn't it be better if everything was kind of set up?
Yeah,
we're getting into the nuts and bolts here. One thing, I mean, if you're old, I mean, no offense, if you're old, don't come. I mean, if you have any, if you're at high risk, don't come. And that's the important thing here. I think young people and healthy people are less likely to be affected by the virus. But if you're older and it's a chance of death when you get it, I mean, you've got to think about that. I mean, I don't think we should be having 80-year-olds in the stadium. It's just that's the higher risk of getting it. Is that – am I being crazy?
No, no. It's just – you're absolutely right what you're saying in such an insensitive way.
Well, I mean, it's just – should I just – okay, come to – I'm sorry, old people. You should come. You can come. You got to be harsh to people, man. This is a global pandemic. Like, wake up. If you don't want to get it, stay at home.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And if you're a higher risk, just play numbers, a numbers game. Stay safe, mask up, do everything outside. And if you're high risk for any pre-existing health conditions or from old age, stay inside so you don't get it.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, my parents are going through it right now. I mean, they're freaking out. And my mom just stays home and wears a mask everywhere she goes.
She doesn't go anywhere. The same thing. Yeah, no, I'm dealing with the same thing. I don't know how much where my parents go, but it's definitely like – every time I talk to him, are you wearing your mask?
Exactly. I told my mom I was at a pool with literally, I think there were 10 people there, mm-hmm. and it was the most social. I mean, I was with two people. It was the most socially distanced thing because you're outside, the water's chlorinated, and you're in this big pool area, and I was 30 feet from the closest person. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not socially distancing. Because her birthday was yesterday, so we all went to Greensboro to see her. And it was like a whole thing. I was like, geez, I mean, it just sucks. People are freaked out.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. All right. Let's take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about the issues and the complaints people had with the Scoop podcast. We're going to answer the haters. We're going to have an open.
I'm looking forward to this.
Transparent discussion. I went through every single comment. I read the comments.
I'm really looking forward to this.
And we're going
to
wrap it up with that. And then the top five quickly here. As we wrap up this podcast, so we'll be right back with The Scoop.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
And we are back. Don, what's going on?
I'm eager to hear your response.
We had some complaints on the last podcast about like me making fun of Don, bickering. First of all, I wrote everything down. I don't think there was any bickering, but people had some complaints about some offensive jokes, and it wasn't even like direct jokes. I think there were just innuendos or suggestions that And it's not just that. It was just like, I guess people had some complaints with our banter and our locker room banter. Don, you read the whole thread. What were your thoughts on the initial complaints and kind of where it went?
Well, I think we made the decision, and this was actually this is going a little bit of, I guess, inside baseball, but you and I had talked about joining forces on the podcast probably about 6 months before we actually did it. And you know, talked about just how we wanted to kind of, we may not have said it exactly, but we wanted it to be personality based. You know, we didn't want it to be dry and just give the information. And I get it. Some people want that. But I think most people want some sort of personality-based listening. And the thing with that is the positive with it is you're going to get people who really kind of cling to you and really like what you're doing. The negative of that is you're going to have people who aren't going to like you. And I get it. It's just like regular – it's just like normal life. I mean, there's people, believe it or not, there are people in this world who do not like me. And there are people in this world who do not like Ross. And I'm sure the same people who don't like us on podcasts or not wouldn't like us in person either.
Yeah. I mean, look, I try to not be boring. And that's the way I live my life. I just don't – life's too short to be boring. Like, do you want me to just – do I just want to read the news? Travion Stevenson committed to North Carolina. Don, what are your thoughts? Like, that's not how I operate. And – a lot of my writing, I'm restricted because I just do news writing and I don't have the chance to show a lot of personality. And podcasts and radio are great ways to show personality. And I'm just being myself. This is how, and this is a lot of TV shows have moved and movies and stuff have moved towards how people really talk.
Yeah.
And this is how I mean, I hold back on this podcast. I mean, I hold back so much. So people are getting a glimpse of how you and I talk normally. But we're holding back.
It's way worse. It's way worse before we push the record button.
Yeah. So people are complaining about little jokes, and that's fine. You can complain all you want. But let me tell you one thing.
Oh, God.
This is a free podcast. No one is making you listen to this podcast. We want you to listen. I want you to listen. I want you to just rate, review, subscribe. But if you don't like it, you don't have to listen to it. And so if you're going to complain, I mean, complain all you want, but no one is making you listen to this podcast. So I don't know, read the scoop, but if you get offended and you don't like, I mean, I'm going to maybe dial back some of the stuff, but if you get offended and don't like the locker room talk and the jokes and the banter and the way Don and I interact, like, you don't have to listen. So that's my first complaint to some of the guys and girls, whoever it was, on the message boards. All right, what else we got here? Someone said I made them feel uncomfortable. I'm sorry that you were offended. And then a lot of positive comments. A lot of people were like supporting us and saying that this whole PC world that we're living in, this is just a perfect example. People complaining about just normal stuff, bickering. Donna, do we bicker? I wouldn't call it bickering.
I mean, could someone show me a snippet and be like, "This is bickering," and me listen to it and be like, "Ah, yeah, maybe we're bickering a little bit." Maybe. I don't think we do it consistently. I think we have good chemistry and. You know, and we were not going to agree on everything, and we might kind of mess with each other a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a little back and forth joking stuff. Yeah, I mean, one thing like about me, kind of making fun of Don, like Don responded. That's how guys show affection. I make fun of all my best friends.
Ross loves me.
Yeah, I do. I make fun. That's how I like show that I like someone is being able to kind of poke fun and make fun of people. And when I make fun of Don's weight, Don's not that fat. So like, it's not even, it's kind of a joke because if you know Don, he's not a big guy.
No.
It's just his love of fast food and his love of desserts is what it's
donuts.
Called. Yeah. I mean, Don exercises. He walks around the block every morning. Somebody was complaining how I made fun of how much Don eats. I probably eat way more than Don. I just work out. Someone said I was condescending. I mean, it's probably true. Someone said I was stroking my ego. I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know. I'm just being myself. So if you think I'm stroking my ego, then I guess I am. I mean, I have an ego. Everyone does. If you don't, then you're lying to yourself. Okay. How about when I asked recruits that if they're annoying, if Don is annoying when he's covering their recruitment? That was an interesting one.
Yeah. So. I agree to it. I think certain guys like Jefferson Boaz, who I have an unbelievable relationship with, it works because the kid is just awesome as far as like handling situations, responding to stuff. But I have a really good relationship with him.
Yeah.
Some of the other guys I don't have, I think you asked it to Elijah Green and Elijah Green was like, I don't even really know who Don is. You
know? Yeah, so
he's saying, like, this is the first time I ever met Don, even though
that was such a, excuse my language, such a stupid complaint. It's a last question. You know, this is how I do it in press conferences too. You ask the stupid questions at the end and make sure there's nothing else to be asked. Like I do with Roy Williams and Mac Brown. If there's something I kind of want to, you know, maybe a little tidbit or like a little jokey thing I did with Larry Fedora too. You wait to the very end so that every reporter can ask their question and everything you need. You wait. I wait around. I say, hey, is anyone else having any questions? You kind of look around. If there's nothing else, then there's time to ask other questions to have fun. And that's my point. I do it at the very end. I don't try to distract from the conversation. And then I think it's just a goofy question. It's a throwaway question. It takes 30 seconds. And I think it was a little funny. Sorry, I won't do it anymore. Sorry to offend.
I don't think there's anything wrong with throwaway questions, especially when you're in this sort of setting. I mean, these guys, the majority of the important questions, a lot of times have been asked a gazillion times. So it's more of kind of a little bit of rehashing that we do, trying to dig a little bit deeper. And then you have a little bit more fun, which is a lot easier when you can actually see the person. You just naturally, I think, just want to have a little fun. I know that when I interview a recruiting person, the interviews are a lot more personal, are a lot more fun, a lot more easy. Compared to on the phone where it always feels like, unless depending on the kid, but most kids, it just kind of feels like it's just all business.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another comment. The only complaint I've ever had is that sometimes it appears Ross isn't listening at all at what's being said and instead just says good stuff.
Can I say,
moves on to another question.
Yeah. So I do the same. See, we're trying to, in addition to have a conversation, I'm looking up stuff because I know what we're going to talk about next. And I want to make sure it's on my screen and rehash. And I'm sure that you do the same thing. It's just kind of, we're multitasking and.
Yeah. I got 15 windows open right now and boss is texting me in text. And sometimes it's just, I mean, good stuff. That's great. Let's move on. That's how interviews work.
What's the other thing too, is that a lot of these topics we could probably talk about for 5 hours straight.
And I have to corral Don because I mean, he sometimes speaks.
I could be long-winded.
Long-winded. So it's my job as the host to kind of move it on. Because at some point, there's just nothing else to say. And I mean, I feel like I ask the right questions. I mean, I'm biased. I think I'm great.
Well, and if you watch a TV show, like those, especially those ones that are conversation-based, there is usually somebody, a man or woman, who's that's their job is to kind of just set the stage and keep things moving.
The TNT show, the basketball NBA show with Charles Barkley, Shaq,
Ernie Johnson.
Ernie Johnson has to corral and stuff like that. All right, not to compare myself to Ernie Johnson or you to Charles Barkley, but weight-wise, maybe. Okay, so that's about it. But I will say this, most of the comments were positive. People coming to our rescue, and I think in general people like our banter, like the podcast, like the personality we bring along with the information, and there's a small minority that does not like it. And if you don't like it, you do not have to listen. There are millions of podcasts you can listen to, so don't waste your time if you're offended or anything. But rate, review, and subscribe, and we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you listening.
And, we do.
And reading. Yeah. So listen all you want.
Please listen.
I'm saying if you get offended, don't listen. I don't watch stuff I don't want to watch. I don't listen to stuff I don't want to listen to. So no one's making you listen to this. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on, Don. Top five. Let's get top right five. Into it.
Yes. Let's roll through this real quickly.
Yeah. I know you have somewhere to be. Pull up the Google documents. We said the top five most important players for the 2020 season. Like if this player was injured, how would it impact the team is kind of how I think about it. So maybe not the best player, but the most important, okay? I'll start. John from Roanoke. Asim Richards, whoever emerges at left tackle. Good point. We don't know the depth chart yet. Everyone assumes the offense is going to be a strength. The offense won't hit the ground running unless a left tackle spot gets figured out quickly. Great point. Ray Vohacek, replacing Crawford and Strobridge is going to be key. Great point. Jill Taylor, again, replacing Crawford and Strobridge is going to be key. Brian Anderson, number four. He's a center and needs to play better this year. With a year of experience, another year of strength and conditioning, Anderson should feel and perform better at the position. That's going to be interesting because Anderson will be competing with Ty Murray. So that should be a position of concern for UNC or a position to watch. And whoever takes Miles Dorn's place at safety. Cornerback should be fine. But does Ja'Cory Conley step in for Dorm? Does Bryson Richardson and DeAndre Holland step in? That's the biggest question mark for me. In defensive backfield, and the competition is wide open. I'll go with Conley to step up and in that position. Interesting. I'm pumped for Conley.
Me too.
So, yeah. Me too. All right, you're up.
All right, I'm going to go with John from Charlottesville, who, and I like the way he did this. And I think it might have seemed someone else with not such a brain as mine might have looked at it and been like, John is lazy. I looked at it and I saw that John was very shrewd with what he did. He took a screenshot of the depth chart on rlads.com, which has all the depth charts or whatever, of just UNC's offensive line. And Awesome Richards, Joshua Zudu, Brian Anderson, Marcus McKeithen, and Jordan Tucker. I like the idea because that's the theme that I kind of sort of went with. I think that, you know what you have at quarterback, you know what you have at skill position players on offense, but it's not going to matter too much if Sam Howell does not have the time. And there are some holes that need to be filled on the offensive line. So I do like what John did.
I will not make a joke there. All right. Noah from Korea. Similar. Left tackle, Zudu. So I think we think it's going to be Awesome Richards. But, yeah, Zudu might play there. He might be a guard. But, yeah, that left tackle position. Left guard on Ed Montilla. Same thing. That's going to be open competition. So he's going positions, not necessarily players. Excuse me. The right side of the line should be pretty solid. The skill positions are clearly ridiculous, and we know what we have here. It's all about making sure Sam has time to throw and stays upright. If those happen, the offense should be a thing of beauty. Then he goes linebacker, Chaz Surratt. No reason to think Chaz won't take a step forward, but especially with the youth on defensive line, having a healthy Chaz with more time focused on learning the linebacker position should be central. If he's a difference maker, he appears to be, the defense could take big strides quickly. And he said nose tackle with Raymond Vohasek. He's definitely on the way. Help is definitely on the way with all the young talent we're bringing in on the defensive line. I can't wait to watch that unit in 2022. But for now, we need these veterans to be a bridge to the generation and at least be solid with the defense, goes through some growing pains against early competition. Defensive line and linebacker, the Fox brothers. There are solid veteran pieces at defensive line, linebacker, and young talent, much of which is probably a year away. But Tamari and Tamon Fox seem to have pretty unique skill sets that could be lethal in a Bateman defense if they're channeled effectively. If these guys step up this year, defensive front seven gets really interesting. All right.
So I'm going to go with Dale from Waxhaw. Number one, Awesome Richards, big shoes to fill, replacing Charlie Heck. Number two, Tamon Fox. Defense has got to get consistent pressure without blitzing, and it starts with Fox coming off the edge. Number three, Jace Reuter. If Howell is going to be allowed to run more, Reuter better be ready to play, and I think he needs to stay healthy. Number four, Patrice Rene / Kyler McMichael. Cheating here by naming two, as depending on health and availability, these two will go a long way in dictating the schemes. Number five, Chaz Surratt, potential All-American, three-down linebacker, national feel-good story. His continued success would keep himself and UNC in the spotlight and would put a feather in the cap for Bateman and company by saying, look what we did with a converted quarterback. Imagine what we'll do with you. Well, ready for ours?
Yep, let's go ours. Appreciate those who submitted. We will drop a new top five next week. Okay, I'll go ahead and read mine, Don. How about that?
Sounds great.
Okay, so I'm going to go to the center position with either that being Brian Anderson or Ty Murray. I'm very interested in that competition. I think Ty Murray has a lot of upside, but Anderson has started in the past. And it's a good locker room guy and a good kid, so I'll be interested to see what happens there. And that position, the interior offensive line is key for this team. That was the weakness last year, so they got to shore that up, and that starts in the middle at center. I'll go Chaz Surratt next. I mean, it's clear. A lot of people have said it. I mean, he's going to be your best defender. You lose that guy, you lose a lot of production, a lot of playmakers, a lot of leadership, and, you know, he's poised for a huge season. So that'd be a huge loss, I think, in that kind of middle linebacker position. Your left tackle, these aren't really in a particular order. Left tackle, like we said, many people said, whether that be Awesome Richards or Zudu, or if they bring a young guy in, or if they move Tucker there, that position is key, left tackle. I'm going to cheat a little bit here and go the Fox brothers. I think Tamari Fox is so versatile that he can play two or three positions on the defensive line. So losing him really impacts what the defensive line can do, because he can play a little interior. He can play on the edge. You know, the way Bateman uses him will be very interesting to follow him. And I think he has the biggest upside of anybody on the defensive line right now who's going to play. You know, it's Jaleel Taylor. It's Raymond Vohacek and Tamari Fox. You could name any one of those guys. I'm just going to say Tamari Fox because of his versatility, because he can fill in anywhere if anybody else gets hurt. And Tamon Fox, you need a pass rusher. You need to get the quarterback. And obviously, he's going to be UNC's best pass rusher, the most experienced guy. I mean, he's looking at a big year, you know, with the NFL draft coming up. I mean, he has a – this is his money-making year, Tamon Fox. And then last one, no one's really said an offensive skill player other than Jace Reuter, I believe. So I'm going to go Dyami Brown, because having a deep threat completely changes your offense. We saw it when Matt Collins was injured in 2016. When you lose a deep threat wide receiver of that talent, it changes what you can get, what you can do. Now, the excuse could be, well, UNC has tons of wide receivers. They have young guys. They have some freshmen who can go deep. They have the numbers there. But to have an elite receiver like Dyami Brown who can take a top off a defense and force that safety to double team and all that good stuff, losing him, I think, would drastically change what Phil Longo could do.
Looks good. Looks good. All right. So the route I went, and I kind of alluded to it a little bit when I was talking about the first submission, was I focused more on the two lines, because I feel like those – I went a different route than you did, Ross. I'm looking at, okay, UNC has these guys. Where do we need some guys to maybe kind of step up a little bit? So – my list, I'll just start it off. Number five, Tamon Fox. I think someone needs to step up in that leadership role that Miles Dorn provided. And Fox obviously has been a leader for North Carolina. He's probably going to take more of a leadership role for his senior season. In addition to that, you're going to need him to get some pressure on the quarterback. And that's going to be one of the keys, especially you have a lot of talent in the secondary, but I think kind of figuring out who goes where and who fits where best, that's going to be key. And that might be something that a edge rusher can kind of help kind of alleviate some of the growing pains and kind of figuring some of those things out. Number four, you know, Tamon's brother, Tamari, you know, from reasons that you mentioned, his versatility, but also, and this is going to be a theme for my next couple of guys, Crawford and Strobridge leaving. You know, I think those guys are going to be greatly missed. And the three guys who are typically down linemen, and I know that guys move around and all that, and Bateman's defense, but those guys are going to be key. And you're basically, I mean, Jaleel Taylor did see a lot of time last year, but a lot was put on Crawford and Strobridge. Which brings me to my next guy, Ray Vohacek. You know, same thing. I mean, he's going to have to step up for those guys to help. I think the difference between Vohacek and Tamari is that Vohacek's older, so the veteran presence that Crawford and Strobridge provided, Vohacek is going to be able to provide that a lot more than Tamari. And then number two for me, Jaleel Taylor. I'm keeping with that theme.
Defense, huh?
I know. Well, all linemen for the most part. You know, he's a guy who played a lot, and so he knows what it's like. So I'm personally kind of expecting a lot from him, just because he, unlike some of these other, I mean, I guess Vohacek and Tamari did play a lot, but I feel like Taylor played a lot more in key positions, key situations. And so, I mean, you really, the defense should kind of look for him to really kind of step up for Crawford and Strobridge's absence. And for my number one, I'm going to go offense on you, but I'm going to go that left tackle position. Austin Richards, you know, replacing Charlie Heck, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast. If, you know, it doesn't matter how good Sam Howell is, how good Dyami Brown, the running backs, all that sort of stuff, if they don't have time to do what they need to do in the field, it's not going to matter. And so having a reliable left tackle, that's where it kind of starts. But the entire offensive line is going to be key.
What was Austin Richards like during his recruitment? Or what was his – was he really good in his recruitment? What's the kind of top?
Yeah, so he was – it was kind of weird because he lived outside of Philadelphia, played for a very, very small school for a coach who seemed just completely overwhelmed. And, you know, it was a lot of projection from school's parts. And North Carolina stuck with it. Coach Cap Sebas had a great relationship with him. And I was able to get him to commit. And his family, very, very loyal family. So once they committed, they were good. So that was obviously when Mac Brown took over. And it seemed like they never really wavered at all. And they just stuck with North Carolina because that was the school they were with.
But was he good? Like, was he a highly talented recruit?
He wasn't. I believe he was a three-star. I'm pretty sure he was a three-star. Yeah. And the thing, too, was that he played up until his senior year, he played defensive line. So a lot of schools were recruiting him and looking at him as a defensive line. And then, God, I'm digging into my memory. I believe he camped at North Carolina as an offensive lineman, and that's where they kind of started to kind of look at him and at that position. And then some other schools kind of followed suit and also looked at it as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, number 74 offensive tackle, number 901 in the nation, 6'5", 285 as a recruit. Yeah. Haverford School in Pennsylvania.
Yes. And I remember the first the game I purposely evaluated broke down his full first game at offensive tackle, which was interesting.
That's awesome. All right, Don, anything else?
No, just no more picking on Ross. He gets really, really offended by it.
No, I mean, I appreciate the feedback.
See ya. Yep, appreciate the feedback. See you later.
All right, thanks for listening to Scoop, guys.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.